G'day, folks. Talk to Rowan O'Reilly from Smarter Bodies, Smarter Minds. Fascinating stuff. The therapy that he's using to do with virtual reality, VR, and augmented reality, AR. And just how that helps with connecting the mind to the body and enhancing and building up neuroplasticity. And he also jumped in some of the philosophies that he relies on, East and West, and especially where he jumps into some of the East philosophies with Miyamoto, Musashi, and the Way of the Sword. Fascinating stuff. And if you like it, hit that subscribe button. Be much appreciated. And want to thank our sponsors, Permobil Australia, the greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four wheels right here. And they've got great assistive tech also. So righto, let's get into it.
Keep rolling with Jake Briggs.
Oh yeah.
Righto, we're rolling.
Good.
Rolling. Smarter Bodies, Smarter Minds. Thanks for letting us and the crew down here.
Very welcome, thank you. It's an honour to have you here.
Thank you. Oh, there we go, boom, going across. So, mate, if you can just take us through Smarter Bodies and Smarter Minds and just the origin of it.
Sure.
And just where your passion lies within what you've created here.
Sure. Well, to start, it's been something that has evolved organically. I didn't know that it would end up like this. You know, over 10 years ago, I started to focus on our human performance, potential and improvement. And it quickly became apparent that there was, you know, the physicality that we have is limited by cognitive capacity, but more importantly, a bit emotional capacity. And I found that those things were very, very siloed in traditional information. There wasn't really a sufficient bridge to help people to understand how they felt.
With the bridge of the cognitive and emotional
and physical, yeah. I think they were siloed, and they all had valid streams of information, but it was the interchange between them that seemed to be not well covered, and I felt that was where the secret sauce was. So I became very, very interested in what what are the tools that help people to modulate how they feel? Because if you generally feel better, then your thoughts are in a better place, and if your thoughts are in a better place, your actions or your behavior will be in a better place. So it's it really came down a lot looking at how to help people to modulate their state so that they're going to engage in behaviors that are going to help them, whether they're wanting more performance or more rehabilitation. It was the same equation, basically. So it's essentially been 20-odd years as a private researcher looking at everything that affected from both a Western and an Eastern point of view, and trying to find where were the salient points that actually really seemed to be repeatable. And that led to this journey that started to fold in progressively more technology. And ultimately, for me, technology, I'm not really a tech nerd. I know it appears that way, but they're tools. And I think that it's just great to have a variety of tools that you can use when appropriately needed. Yeah, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so neuro rehabilitation.
Yeah.
So, and talking about the technology that you say you're not a tech nerd, but you're well immersed in it.
Yes, I am, surprisingly,
and
yeah.
When we're talking about one of the main components that you've got here is the we'll touch, I want to go with VR first.
Sure.
And then we'll roll on to the AR.
Sure.
And if we can talk about the differences between each.
Absolutely.
And then how they assist the person with the disability or the health condition. So if you'd be able to roll with that, mate, that'd be great.
So essentially, VR is an optical illusion. You know, it's been around since the 60s. There were various attempts at trying to get it, most of which were horrendous for the user in terms of inducing cyber sickness. But yeah, they stuck with it, and it wasn't until, you know, essentially what, 3 years ago, that the first commercially stable technology was released. And it's been a game changer. I've been building hypotheses about what may be possible to do with it for years before that happened. And then when, you know, when we finally got our hands on it, it was time to start testing those hypotheses. And I'm really pleased to say that it effectively exceeded my expectations, because I wasn't sure how strong the illusion could be. And then when I first started to, you know, use it, I realized, oh, well, actually, it's very, very convincing. You know, so...
So it's taken the illusion out of the equation.
Well, effectively, technically, it still is an optical illusion, but our brains have evolved to believe what they see.
Yes.
And the visual infrastructure in our brain is a very large component of it, you know, physically. And, you know, if you're convinced that, you know, what you're seeing, if your brain's convinced that what you're seeing is real, it's going to act in a way that replicates that it is real. And that's effectively the trick that we're using.
So with the VR, so with the trick component,
yeah,
you go through that, how, when you're talking about some of the tech components that you got here with the bike and the Icarus, and how that comes into play.
Sure.
Like how the mind plays on that with the body,
yep,
and creating those pathways.
Sure.
Like when we talked before about the topography of the brain.
Yes.
And how that trickles from the top down.
Yep.
If you want to take us through that.
Sure. So the way I explain it is that if you imagine when you go to a theater and you're going to engage in an experience which is being sold to you by the performers in combination of the set. So VR is like the stage, okay? And then what's in that environment would be considered the players or the actors in the stage. And it's a combination of those two things together that is responsible for how much of an experience you will have in that performance. And VR is the same way. So you can imagine if you were viewing a play where it was two actors sitting on stools on a stage having a dialogue exchange, that would have a certain level of immersion in it, you know, a certain level of engagement. But the more dynamic and the more convincing that set was, and the more dynamic the performances, that you would find that your level of engagement would increase proportionate to that. And VR is very, very similar. So that if you're just using VR on its own, I mean, it has a high level of engagement. But if you add it to locomotion systems, and that's what the Icarus and the bike are, their locomotion system, then the level of immersion is dramatically deeper, which means that there's more of your brain believing that it's real, and there's more of your brain then acting as if it's real. And when you're talking about rehabilitation, then there's more signaling coming up from the body, and your brain's trying to send more signaling down. And so this is his way.
She's tricking itself.
Yes, and here's where your neuroplasticity really starts to go from what we perceived as normally plausible to what I like to refer as a state of superplasticity. Because you're emotionally engaged, cognitively engaged, and physically engaged. That's the triad. That's the secret sauce in that triad.
And with the triad, with the plasticity, how does that build and work from the ground up and just keep, you know, gradually growing itself as you're going through these systems, and from what you're seeing with some of your clients?
Yeah. So we always start with the basics. We just start with, you know, the simple VR on its own and see how a person responds to them. What we're looking at is how they respond emotionally, cognitively, and physically. Now, we'll present them with a low-level skill challenges in the beginning, and then once they adapt to that, we'll continuously make it more complicated, because we actually don't want you to master a skill, okay? Sounds counterintuitive, but we want you in that hyper-learning zone, and that hyper-learning zone is when you can't do a skill and you're trying really hard to do it. So by maintaining that, the level of engagement is very high.
And can you see that with some of the screens that we've got in the background here, when we're looking at the hyper-learning zones, when someone's trying to... You can you see them where they're trying to push too far beyond that point within that zone?
There's combinations. So you can basically, you can pick up cues from EEG, looking at signals coming off the brain in HRV, particularly with HRV if they're starting to develop a stress response.
And can you explain just with the screens that you got in the background here and what they are monitoring and what they are seeing when the person is engaged in the equipment?
Sure, so they're not alive at the moment, but basically starting from left to right, it's EMG. So we could basically, EMG is electromyography. It's picking up the electrical activity off muscle. So if you were to put one on your bicep and you were looking at the readout and your arm was flaccid, you would sort of see this. And as soon as you contracted, you see these large spikes. So that if you're actually trying to get a semi-paretic limb to activate, then you would be saying to a person, okay, so to send a volitional controller, I want to flex my knee joint, I want to flex, which activate the quad. What you would be seeing is from a resting bed, these little spikes. Now, how VR works in this trick is you imagine that two scenarios. One is we're just saying to you, okay, you're sitting here, you can see your leg. I want you to try and create flexion in your leg by contracting your quad. And you would get a maximum amount, okay? Then if you put a person in VR where, you know, they're in a situation where their life depended on using that leg, you would see a significantly different response.
Yep.
And that in itself is the trick, because there's more of the brain engaged, so you essentially get...
And it's a numbered system, so then you can see...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's very much data, hard data driven, and you basically effectively get more of a sympathetic response. So the handbrake would be coming off the parasympathetic system, which breaks how much physical activity you can get and gives you more access.
Yep.
So it's like that survival response almost. But you know, the challenge is not creating a stress response per se. You maybe it's good to have little, tiny little spikes of it, but you can't keep a person in that zone. Yep. It's counterintuitive to learning. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, positively getting those numbers up.
Yes.
But also where you're talking about that as being data, and if you've got multiple clients coming in, that's just showing that this holistic approach to what you're doing here does work.
Well, it's a start of looking at some aspects of that, why it may be working and what systems that it's working. But you know, to clinically validate that, you'd have to have external people doing it over, you know, randomized placebo trials and longitudinal studies. Now, I have no doubt that this model here will become much more mainstream, because data's the health system and health funding is becoming much more driven by health economics.
And there's research components going into this now, with the data and research with the clientele that's coming in and with the numbers and data that's coming
only
in.
Within ourselves, because we're a very small private business and we simply don't have the funding or the capacity to be running those type of trials. But with Near Immersive, that's what we'll be doing. We've already organised some clinical pilot trials in multiple locations in Australia and around the world to actually validate that the approach does work. And that system is essentially a combination of all of this miniaturised, particularly for upper limb and hand rehab.
Well, everybody's got to start somewhere. And from what I've seen, you got more than enough to, you know, go over and above and beyond just what's within here. And from what I hear and from what I see, I can see this growing, and I hope for nothing but the best for you, mate. But
thank you.
I just want to jump into, because I've got limited knowledge in augmented reality.
Yeah.
So if you want to throw us into the deep end of that, mate.
Sure, so if we look at it, as broadly defined as XR technologies, there's a spectrum, and from our point of view, the spectrum is dependent on what level of immersivity that those technologies create. So VR would still be the highest, because you're completely encapsulated in that environment. Augmented reality has different versions, so some people, the traditional view of augmented reality was, for example, you have an exercise bike with a screen in front of it, and that screen may have a representation of a bike and a a graphic that represents riding a bike, and there's a certain level of engagement that is enhanced over just riding bike. But it won't equal what VR equals.
But if they're sitting on the bike with how AR works, is that where they can look around left to right and they're seeing, like, you know, different versions of what, if, you know, if they're on the road and they're pedaling along and they can look to the left and they're seeing a car or a house or...
Not with AR. Not with AR. Yeah. AR is potentially just a straight ahead view. VR, you have this 360 degree view that replicates reality.
Okay.
So VR, if you were riding your push bike along this coast and you want to look at the ocean, it would be right there.
Okay.
So it replicates reality to the closest degree. Other versions of augmented reality are where you'd be wearing what effectively look like clear safety glasses, and you could be in this environment right here now looking out to the trees and everything appearing normal, but all of a sudden, you know, a 50-foot Tyrannosaurus would come through that door and it would appear real. So this is really interesting in terms of we don't know what that's going to potentially do to the brain. I think the potential for rehab would be something along the lines of you would be sitting here looking at your legs and then, you know, we could say to yourself, okay, well, we're going to activate the stimulation now, and then you would see your legs move.
Okay.
Even if they weren't.
Yes.
So, but what's happening when you're doing that is then you're actually starting to get activation of neural circuitry because your brain's seeing your leg move. And so that's that would be a top-down stimulus effect. Yeah.
Mate, what I'm fascinated about with your philosophies. So when you're talking about you've got the West, you've got the East, and you're trying to get that to meet in the middle. So where does that come about?
Well, I think that importantly is that, you know, look, we're very, very lucky that we're living in a time where technology, it can do fantastic things. But the fact is that, you know, we're not robots, and we're emotive beings, and we're mainly driven from our emotions, and that's driven from what we subconsciously associate to either positive or negative. So if you don't associate positively to technology, well then this stuff's not going to do a great deal for you. What we're trying to do is make sure that we have environments, as many different environments, that suit people's subconscious disposition. So for example, if you had most young dudes who are like into gaming, and you'd say to them, okay, look, you know, they would present with chronic depression that had been resistant to all other approaches. And you would say to them, look, you like gaming, and they would respond yes or grunt at you, as often happens. They know that they're, you know, that they need to get outside and engage life and exercise, but it has no emotional reward. So they wouldn't do it because gaming's giving them a much larger reward.
Okay.
And so everything's rated against reward structure.
Reward, dopamine, like
absolutely, reward circuitry. Yeah. So if gaming's up here and real life's down here, and if the idea of going for a walk or exercising is down here, you're not going to get traction. But if we would say to them, okay, how would you like to drive a tank in VR and actually feel missiles being shot towards you or you blowing other tanks up? That's a vastly different response. And you'll quite frequently see people like that get on that bike and go for like half an hour straight, come out sweating with saucer-shaped eyes, being like, wow, really engaged. And then, you know...
Yeah, it's not really what they think they can get, like just out of gaming, but actually what you're talking about, the physical effects of that.
Well, the emotional effects of stimulating physical systems.
Yes.
You know, and so that to me is tremendously exciting, you know, because the fact is that's... Once you're trapped in that disproportionate dopamine response where you're relying on technology, which is not conducive to well-being, you're in trouble. You know, you're in trouble. Where when you start to then more be reassociated to physical exertion being the basis of your big hit, well, then that starts to turn people around relatively quickly. And that's a really exciting thing. So all of the threads in the East and the West connection are based on I would say that the East is more representative of us as emotional beings and feeling beings, and the West more thinking and technology. But really fundamentally, again, we're much more dominated by our emotions, which are subconsciously mediated than we are by our thoughts. We like to think that we're thought-driven, but it's not true. And it's massively relevant to rehabilitation, because if you're already in a suppressed state and someone's saying to you, well, you know, you need to do these exercises 400 times a day, every day for the rest of your life, for the majority of people, that's not going to elicit a great response. But if you could say, well, what about then we reframe this so that you're going to, this is going to feel exactly how you want it to feel, then the amount of effort that you're going to put into it is going to get you to those target threshold levels much, much faster. So that to me is my explanation of the East-West hybrid blend. Yeah.
And with the hybrid blend, with the East and the West, are there any particular Eastern philosophers that you turn to, or that you get your inspiration from, or that, you know, they got some of their perspectives that blend in what you're trying to elevate here now?
Yes, Miyamoto Musashi would be one. I think I like the idea of trying to be in the middle. Well, you just say it in terms of swordplay, the center guard is the best position. So you're not trying to be bent too hard one way or the other, you're trying to be in the center, which represents, you know, your I Ching and your balance. And although that's not relevant from a Western clinical point of view, but from a human being's point of view, I think it's massively relevant, because again, you know, how we feel on a daily basis will define our behavior. Behaviors will create our lives, either positively or negatively.
Yeah, as you can see with Musashi, how it not only develops through his teachings, not just, you know, physically what you can do and what you can wield with the swords, but also mentally, you know, how that, you know, guides the mind, body and soul, and what you're trying to incorporate, what you're going on here.
Yeah, what you're focusing on. And if your rehab means you're focusing on feeling good, well, that's going to give you a much better output majority of the times than it is being the other way around, where it's just a dread and it's painful, boring.
And I just want to say a shout out to one of my mates, Dan Finance, because he's over in Japan at the moment, and he only just visited one of the, I forget where it was, but obviously in Japan, but he saw the sword on display. It's pretty powerful stuff.
Interesting comment. I've been studying the Japanese sword as an art form since I was 13. I've made a couple of trips over there and seen, you know, famous makers and access to private collections. And yeah, to me, I mean, this is off track, but to me, the Japanese sword has been a key part of my life philosophy for this main reason, that. And I'll try not to bore you too much here, but the secret of Japanese sword is that
it's
too
boring, mate. I love this stuff.
It's two conflicting elements. Steel can be hard and sharp, but it's brittle, or it can be soft and ductile, but it won't harden edge. The secret is that it's both. It's a soft core surrounded by a hard edge. And for me, that's a good philosophy in life, because you want to be emotionally ductile, but you need somewhat a hardened exterior to be able to cut through the challenges in life. And that's, for me, I suppose, been a great analogy of studying the sword as an art object for you know, over 30 years now.
And does that come into the play of how the swords are made and the folded steel?
It's layering, yeah. Absolutely. It's layering and it's tempering and it's a refinement of the iron the iron sands and the precise heat treatment and just going by intuition and experience. And yeah, look, I think that it's metaphysical, you know, it's metallurgical, it's energetic, it's a beautiful blend to me, but it's been a great sort of defining philosophy for me about that, you know, having two conflicting things, how do you blend them? And I think the perfect blend was the soft, malleable core surrounded by a hard and sharp edge. I think it is a relatively good one that's worked for me.
And generally, with your clients and their disabilities or their health conditions, what do they have Like, if it's, like, do you have a lot of SCI or, I don't know, if it's, you know, motor neuron or what other disabilities or...
It's a combination. Generally, I think symptom description, they're defined as medical orphans. So we tend to, for the most part, be sought out by people who've already been through everything they could find in mainstream. And one of the most general comments is, we've already tried everything. You know, and I understand what that means in terms of...
As in, they've gone to therapists, they've done this, they've done that.
They've tried a lot of different
things. It's not working. Can you help me out?
Yeah, and the fact is, I understand that there is an emotional component. There's a lot of heartache and stress involved in pursuing journeys, particularly once you step outside mainstream medicine. You know, it's fraught with danger and misinformation. You know, it can be immensely confusing, so...
That's what's good that you're building this data.
Well, it's not acknowledging that is the case, and I think it's the first base. I think you have to have empathy for people to understand that, you know, they're not a number. They've been through a lot of trauma and been through a lot of trial and tribulation, and it's ongoing. What we try and say is the first base, we acknowledge that. Secondly, we don't believe we have miracle cures here. What we do have is a really strong want to understand how you work and try and find ways to stimulate your system that may be appropriate for that, feel good to you, knowing that you're driving the system, not us. We're not doing things to you, we're working for you.
Yeah. And are there any examples that you'd be able to give of any of your clients where it's gone from ground zero, coming straight in, and to where they've built up, to where, what, at a positive level?
Yeah, so, look, everybody's different, but I think that... dealing with like intractable, what appeared to be intractable or non-responsive depression or psychological issues are very joyous, you know. Stroke is been fantastic to see people go from, you know, not being able to walk to being able to walk, and then to not having function in their upper limbs to having function. I mean, you know, being part of people's journeys and helping them to regain function is absolutely the most deeply satisfying thing I've ever done. You know, and I'm driven to think, well, how can we do this better? But there's been lots of incredibly joyous moments about, you know, people going from, you know, I just want to walk again, or I just want to pick my children up and play with them again, to seeing that happen. I mean, that's a beautiful thing to be part of.
It's amazing.
And that, to me, that's the point of tech. So that's why I say I'm not into tech. I'd rather be in the beach. But if tools can do that, then I'm going to persistently find the best tools I can to help facilitate those outcomes. Yeah.
And with those outcomes, so when you've got your clientele that are coming in here, are you using all this equipment? So what advice do you give to them when they go home? So what do they have to work on when they go home?
So,
like, if it's got to do with the mental state,
yeah,
the physical, where do we go from there?
So I always say to people, the first thing is to understand that your input, much more than anything that we can do here, is going to be the defining, it's going to be defining element on how much success you have. Without a doubt. When people understand that, and I think what you're trying to do is empower people to go, you have the most ability to create the results. What we're trying to do here is just stimulate the system to go, oh, well, wow, okay, I don't feel in pain. I know what it's like to not feel in pain. Maybe that amount of time I'm not in pain can grow. Maybe I can have a pain-free life or a much lower amount of pain in my everyday life. But the point is, first of all, it's focus. You have to be focused. You know, and focus for a lot of people is very, very problematic. It's just because it's a skill set, and this is where the concept of meditation is really valid. The fact is, not because of any spiritual element, because, you know, in order to consistently do something at a high level, you have to know how to hold focus on it. You know, so I'd say learning how to focus, learning how to breathe. If anything, breathing would be the most fundamentally important component in rehabilitation, physiologically speaking, because if you can't breathe correctly, you can't modulate your central nervous system.
So when I'm thinking of breathing, I think of Wim Hof. So would it be along the lines of breathing techniques and meditation and along the lines of that, yeah?
Yes, but there is a whole spectrum of different ways you can breathe. The most important one is to understand how to down-regulate your stress response by inducing diaphragmatic breathing with appropriate mental focus and emotional content. Because often when you've had a neurological injury or you're constantly in pain, you're going to be overly sympathetic a lot of the time, and it's just going to exasperate everything that's not good about life. When you can learn that you can actually regulate in a downward direction that response, everything becomes better, and the brain's in a better position to learn there. So if anything, that's probably the most important thing. It affects everything once you can regulate your breathing. Yeah.
And talking about focus, the mind, the alpha thing. And I know with myself, like when I'm trying to get in the zone, I haven't had it for a while, but back in the past, I've taken nootropics, and it's worked for me personally. It doesn't work for everybody else out there. But do you ever advise on nootropics or some sort of supplementation or anything like that when people are at home or wherever they may be to, before they go to sleep, maybe take this or anything like that, or maybe go and see a GP so they can prescribe you X, Y, and Z?
I'm not technically allowed to make it biochemical, to offer biochemical advice to people. What I can do is say, okay, so for your particular set of symptoms, here is some research that indicates that these things may be possible. Apart from that, it's up to you to actually make decisions about what's right for you. Yeah, and there are a lot of options biochemically out there that can substantially enhance rehabilitation pathways. But again, it really is down to the individual, because there are more things to try than possible with the amount of time that most people have. And that's one of the biggest problems. It's management of inputs is huge. So, just because if you have 50 hours a week you can rehab, that doesn't mean, in my opinion, that 50 hours of rehab is going to get you better result. Because it's more about what you can recover from than how much stimulus you can put in. And that has to be balanced by, your biochemistry / nutrition, sleep patterns, hydration, social interactions. Yeah.
So do you advise that to, if it's someone to get a Dexter scan or go to your GP and just sort of generally see where your hydration levels are at, or to get an overall sort of check up before we sort of jump into this sort of stuff?
Absolutely. Yep. I always advise people, seek advice from the people who you trust.
Yep.
And then do your homework.
Yeah.
Because this isn't mainstream, and you're not going to find medical clinical studies that are going to verify this at this point in time. But where you can look, I can just present you with the individual components, which you then could go and research and make up your own mind.
Well, that's a goal at the end of the day. You're giving these people the tools, the essential tools, where it's going to help them get into these neurological pathways, but also where they can think about it, but also go out by themselves, go to their GPs or other clinicians, where they might be able to bring that in to build up their foundation even more so, to get more of those neural pathways to keep going. And the more that they get in here, hopefully the more that that builds, and the more data that clicks up, at the end of the day, also helps you guys, so you guys can branch out, build this up, and get more people in here to get into the VR, to get into the AR. Me being a high level quadriplegic, C5, C6 incomplete quad, I want to myself want to get into this and see where we can go.
Yeah.
And be a part of this system.
We'd be happy to have you on our journey. I think more than anything, self-empowerment is the ultimate. Self-empowerment. Yeah. Yeah. We just try to facilitate part of that journey. Yeah.
Ron, well, I just want to say thanks for myself and the team here for letting us come into your facility and just showing us all the equipment here and just sitting down and having a yarn and just, you know, because this is pretty complex stuff. And I'm really glad that I can't wait to get this out in the atmosphere and so we can show people what this is, what you're doing. And I think it's very important. And yeah, I'm just a bit lost for words because it's pretty overwhelming, this stuff. But mate, is there anybody, any foundations or any research facilities or anything like that? Just anything, any companies or anything else like that that are behind you that you'd want to mention and put out in the atmosphere? And even if it's social media or if it's how you want to be contact, like how you want people to contact you, if you want to just throw that out there, mate, that'd be much appreciated.
Well, Smart Body Smarter Minds is on Facebook and on Instagram. All of the equipment suppliers have been fantastic with support of us and often donated equipment, purely trying to say, well, we would like to know what effect this has on rehab. We didn't design it for rehab, but we can see how that may work. And so, you know, there's too many to mention, but you know, we've been tremendously supported by a lot of people, you know, across the years, because what you're seeing has taken 10 years to evolve to this point, and this is still probably only about 70% of what it will be, and which is really exciting. But the core of it is still, again, the most important thing is the personal interaction with the people. It's far more important than the technology, in my opinion. Yeah, but it's a very exciting time, and yeah, we're really honoured that you came here and spoke with us today. It's great.
Well, that's what it's about, the emotional connection, and just me having this talk with you now, but the emotional connection of the equipment that you've got here and how that can help people at the end of the day, where it might be having that, you know, that little trigger moment of where it might get the wrist moving a little bit better, or maybe moving a leg or getting some sort of sensation back. So, Rowan, much appreciated, mate.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And, mate, I can't wait to get one of these machines.
We'll get you back and have a play.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
Well. Thank you, Jay.
Cheers.
See, folks? Fascinating guy. Awesome technology that he's using up there with the VR and AR and how that's assisting people with disabilities or not. And I can't wait to get up there and give it a crack and see how it assists me as a quadriplegic. Awesome stuff. Great guy. And if you want to get in contact with me, you can get me via Instagram at streetrollingcheetah or email one word streetrollingcheetah@gmail.com. And I've also got a Facebook page, Keep Rolling with Jake Briggs, so check it out. And if you liked what we had a yarn about, hit that subscribe button, be much appreciated. And want to thank our sponsors, Permabil Australia, the greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four wheels right here, and they got great assistive tech also. So righto, see you on the next one.